Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have a returning guest, one of my favorite guests. Her name is Roberta Glass. She runs the True Crime Report on YouTube, so go check that out. She has tons of great content there. But we're going to talk about something we talked about last year in 2020, and it's interesting that this popped up again. So there was a documentary titled Alan. And we talked last year about the same subject, but not with this much detail. It was a four-part series on HBO, and so we're going to talk about that tonight. So, Roberta Glass, are you there?
Yes, very excited to talk about this. Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, it was pretty interesting. Four parts. It was very in-depth. A lot of first-person statements by Mia Farrow. I learned a lot about her family and Dylan Farrow, and just this very kind of complex, you know, kind of my thoughts were like, if you think your family is dysfunctional, you can watch this, but it was really something else. So what were your kind of first impressions?
Well, I was disappointed in some ways because they took, and I don't know if it really matters, but as I was disappointed in what they left out of Mia Farrow's background, of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen together. And so it sort of set up this dichotomy where Mia Farrow is wonderful and terrific and the best mother, best person in the world. She was just a little too naive. And Woody Allen is this horrible person, terrible person, you know? And what it left out is, I mean, obviously, as someone, you know, I was friends with Dori Previn, which Mia Farrow broke up that marriage. I think she says in this that Andre and Dori Previn's marriage was breaking up. It was not breaking up. They were a partnership. You know, they were writing partners. He did the music. She wrote the lyrics. I mean, they were really a formidable couple. And she broke that up. They also don't talk about Christine Englehart, who has pretty much the whole second, a lot of time in the second episode of this series, that she was brought into a threesome with Mia Farrow and Woody Allen. And I think that's important detail, not to make Mia Farrow an enemy. It doesn't suggest that she coached her daughter or anything, but it just adds some kind of flavor into that. You know, Mia Farrow was not enough for Woody Allen. He needed to get an underage partner and bring it into this threesome. So,
right, and she was
left out.
Yeah, but Englehart was with Epstein before Allen, right? So she was like an underage. I don't know if she was trafficked, but she had a relationship with Epstein too before Allen, right?
16. So when did she meet Epstein?
I don't know. I got to look at my facts, but I know that she had a long relationship with Epstein.
Right.
And she talked about it.
And what you brought up just before we started recording is that they didn't bring up Woody Allen's relationship with Epstein.
Right.
And Woody Allen's not someone who has a lot of friends, you know, and he seems to have people who do things for him, who serve a purpose. So what would Epstein's purpose be in Woody Allen's life if it were not to supply him with underage women, girls.
I don't know. I don't. What else would it be? But I mean, that was like the interesting thing about the documentaries. It showed, I think, in the second part, how many of his storylines. He's making a movie every year, right? How many of his storylines are about him and, you know, an underage or young kind of naive girl. And then he twists their kind of sexuality towards him. Like they're the ones that are pushing him for, you know, are the more dominant or aggressively sexual. And I thought that was interesting.
They can't resist the small, nebbish,
neurotic,
New York intellectual.
Yeah.
He's such a sex symbol of, which, I mean, it's kind of funny that he did make himself kind of like this male, I don't even want to call it sex symbol, but leading man, you know, and that you can do that when you write your own movies and direct your own movies. But the other thing that I think is important when you leave out Mia Farrow's, the kind of you know, when you look at her family and she's adopting all these kids, you know, and there's, and she even makes these admissions that are very telling. Like Woody Allen said that he would love a, our baby, if it, you know, would love our baby if it was a little blonde girl. Blonde so hair. I went out and adopted one thinking he would love it and love me more. Like she, it was just a very telling admission that these babies perform and these children fulfill needs in her, you know, deeply as primal motivation for, you know. But the reason why I bring this up, so, you know, Mia Farrow is not being accused of sexually abusing her children. She's being accused of physically and emotionally abusing her kids by Moses, but that came out way later, and how reliable it is, I don't know. It could, you know, both can be true. They both can be terrible people, and Woody Allen can still be, you know, still have molested and abused Dylan. But the reason that this narrative on Woody Allen's side stuck so much with the public is that there is a great deal of the public that looks at Mia Farrow and thinks that there's something very, very wrong with her. That's why it wasn't just his incredible PR team that right. made Woody Allen's narrative stick so well and cemented it so deeply in the, you know, the public's consciousness. It's that something, you know, you look at Mia Farrow and she, you know, she seems, and, you know, she's admitting in this that she hit Sunyi, and in court she admitted she pummeled her, you know, arms and it hit her face. It was really like an attack. Is that the first time it happened? I don't know. But it, you know, it seemed like it made sense. But when you see Woody, what makes me feel that Woody Allen is guilty has nothing to do with what Mia Farrow says, and even so much so Dylan, it's what comes out of Woody Allen's own mouth.
Yeah.
You know, he won't take a lie detector test. Now, Woody Allen supporters just deny all this. It's, you know, well, they're going to say that, I guess, the lead investigator in Connecticut is lying. Fine. Basically, the Woody Allen supporters, their narrative is everybody's lying but Woody Allen. But, you know, he still doesn't, he still, this many years later, won't say where he was for those 20 minutes.
Right. And I mean, just to go back and get kind of more of the details, the kind of assault that took place on Dylan happened after he had or been revealed to have had a relationship with Sunyi. So he had it already happened. And then he visited Mia Farrow's place in Connecticut without Mia Farrow, with which is even weirder, with the kids there. And then they're missing for 20 minutes. And that's when the kind of, that's when Dylan says the assault. But even the TV, like the show, kind of indicated to me that he was in, the way it kind of came across to me was, and this is my opinion, but there was other things going on also, that he was with her and there were inappropriate touchings and all kinds of weird stuff.
Like he of course, Woody Allen supporters deny this, but it's in the court papers as statement of fact that he was in therapy. I think it was with Dr. Coates, who was also, you know, the child's therapist, it seems like, at one point, that he was in therapy for his inappropriate relationship with Dylan.
Right.
So,
he was sticking his thumb in her mouth, like weird stuff.
Right.
Yeah, hand between her. Yeah, it was bad. Like, people were seeing weird stuff. And then the therapist reported it, right? Didn't the therapist report it to
Mia? A therapist in her building noticed Woody Allen's greeting Dylan, and she thought something was very wrong about the way he approached the child and dealt with the child. But the way that this got reported is that Mia Farrow took Dylan to a pediatrician, and the pediatrician by law in Connecticut has to report, you know, sexual abuse. So that's how it got to the police. But, it's just wild to watch him say things like, if I wanted to be a pedophile, I could have, you know, gotten custody and molested them as often as I wanted? I mean, is that what is that where he's going with that?
It almost like he was said that, but that was also another weird element of the whole narrative or saga, is that he was never really married to Mia Farrow, but he went after custody, right? So he like went for the custody, and then that was also another thing. So he was like somebody who's saying, like, I don't want a kid, I don't want this. Okay, then I'm going for custody after that. And then also he was very cold blooded. Like, they had recordings of him with her where he was just like a lizard, man, in my opinion. He was just, well, you'll have to wait in court. You'll just have to do this, blah, blah.
Just tell me where, and he says, I'm not going to be on the cover of Newsweek and Time. And then I remember those covers, and there he was. And really utilize the media. The real mystery of this is what happened in New York with that investigation.
Right.
And what happened at Yale University. Why did and what's in Dr. Leventhal's deposition? Like, none of them showed up. You know, he got this exonerating report from Yale University saying that Dylan can't tell fiction from fantasy, fact from fantasy. And it was given directly to him, which I thought seemed very odd, but maybe that's the
totally
way it's
unethical.
Done.
Yeah, that seems very unethical to me.
And there he is right away willing to give a press conference. And he somehow seemed very shocked by the news, seemed prepared for it. And was money given to Yale University? Was pressure put on them? Why didn't they show up in court? What's in Dr. Leventhal's deposition? That's what I want to know. And the other thing that's very interesting is the way that he was written about in the New York investigation. They said that they called him a big fish or a big wig. I can't remember the exact phrase, that we have to deal with these kind of investigations differently. Paul Williams was fired, the investigator who believed Dylan. So it made me realize that Woody Allen's movies are really advertisements for New York City. I don't think that's out to make advertisements, but they're love letters to New York City. And he's, and the way he's a royalty here, they don't want to bring him down. New York City doesn't want to bring him down. That's a valuable asset to New York.
Right. And it was also weird that they interviewed Dylan 10 times. So it's almost like they're traumatizing her again in the new, like, how many times do you have to interview her? I think Paul Williams said, like, there's a problem here doing this over.
Right.
Like, I think Paul Williams said there was enough for, there was enough for a criminal investigation. So then he got sacked. And he was like a lauded caseworker. So people, to me, like when I was reading that, I'm like, there's something going on behind the curtains. You know, that's kind of what I was thinking. Did you get that impression?
Well, I had a more, I mean, are you talking about sort of like a pedophile underground protecting him type thing?
More of like he put people in place to influence outcomes is kind of my, or, you know, people behind the scenes pulled strings to get the desired outcome. That's the way
I thought that with the Yale, especially New York City, where I've lived for decades now, really treats these people, especially people who make films like that. I can see just his persona having such heavy weight without any kind of money being exchanged or influence. But Yale, I thought, what donations were given, what influence. And also Woody Allen has like this incredible list of medical people that he employs. He has a medical doctor for practically every part of the body and psychiatrists. And how deep does that go? You know, how much does that, I was just curious as to whether he knew someone who knew someone at Yale, or if it was a donation, or if they just really wanted to squash it and just put it away, didn't want to be the people responsible. But the fact that they didn't, none of them showed up in court I take the same opinion as the judge did. It certainly makes the report a little bit more suspect.
Right. But I mean, even the prosecutor said he thought there was enough material to take it to court, but he didn't want a 7-year-old girl to, you know, be the one that it was all going to ride upon, right? So
Connecticut.
What was his
name? Mako.
Yeah. So there's a lot in there, and I just thought that. I thought that she, from listening to her, what would you think about Dylan? And she kind of was weaved through the entire show, but I kind of got the impression that she was trying to, like, detach her from her child persona. Like, she dyed her hair red. She wore kind of orange lipstick. Did you kind of get that feel? Get that impression?
She looks troubled to me. You know, I don't warm to any of the Pharaohs, you know, I hate to see someone in pain. I sympathize. I feel badly for her. What she's been through is terrible. But, and I also sympathize, you know, she kind of lost out on the parent lottery. But, I don't know. To answer your question, I saw a troubled person. Do I believe her? Yes, I do believe her. But, do I warm to her? Do I relate to the Pharaohs? No, I don't. And I think I wish that the filmmakers hadn't gotten so kind of enmeshed in the Pharaoh world, because it became this kind of just glowing, you know. All, and did you think, I thought it was also very weird at the end, the last episode, where after all this happens, all this upset in the family, they leave out Mia Farrow changing all the kids' names and all the weird things that happened. And then she's got more kids. You know, all of a sudden, more kids pop up. She's adopted more kids. Like, when is this child adopting ever going to end? Like, if she had this many cats, people would be like, you know, she's a hoarder. But because she's because they're human beings, she's Mother Teresa. I find it so disturbing. Same with Angelina Jolie, these kind of empty women who just can just never fill the hole of whatever's wrong with them with kids, you know?
All right, are you still there?
Yeah.
Internet just blocks out sometimes, so that's 90 seconds of emptiness. Sorry, so you were talking about kind of her, about Dylan Farrow, and you weren't warm to the family.
I don't warm to anyone in the family, including Ronan. Interesting.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I think it's very interesting the way Woody Allen defenders are making this about Mia being a terrible, and you know, Mia's not, doesn't have to answer these questions. Woody Allen does, you know. I think it has to, and I was sorry that the documentary took that position of Mia Farrow being so great, and Woody, because it doesn't really. I wish we got a less biased view, you know. And when you mesh in the Pharaohs and that and their friends and their family, you're going to like them and you're going to want to present them well. But I don't think it does any favors to basically the argument that's happening, because it's Mia Farrow's horrible, but they don't have any evidence that she coached her kid. That's what they need. You know, who's saying she coached her? Who's, when, how, you know? And yeah, why did public, she make this up?
That was the PR, right?
Right. Now, that's what her Woody Allen's defenders are saying, is that Mia, there's, you know, this was all made up to punish Woody Allen, and you know, the amount of people who would have to be lying, the babysitters, right, you know, the investigators, Woody Allen, you know, and basically they just deny all the evidence. And the really odd stuff is that he wouldn't take a polygraph. His hair was found in the attic. He said, I'm too claustrophobic to ever be in that attic. And then when they found his hair in there, they said, oh, maybe I did poke my head around once or twice. Right. Changing his story, luring up, trying to get custody of the kids, giving very strange interviews, attacking Mia Farrow instead of answering the questions he needs to answer. You know, they've done a very good job.
Yeah, my favorite was they kind of portrayed her as a woman scorned, you know, in the public.
Right.
She was bizarre. I think the phrase they used was bizarre concoctions of a woman scorned, which hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. So they're referencing Shakespeare in people's minds. And I didn't see that. I mean, the real thing that happened was that broke them apart permanently was that Woody Allen was having sex with Soon Yi, possibly when she was underage, right? Before she went to college.
And, you know, last time we talked about this, a few women said to me, thank you for bringing up something that they felt was very important, which is what I said was that, you know, when you're a little girl and these, it doesn't matter that Woody Allen didn't adopt Soon Yi, wasn't the adopted father. He was introduced to her as a father figure. And that's very destructive. To insert to sexually prey on her and groom her, and you know, or have a relationship. However, Woody Allen defenders want to fall in love. However, they want to put it, you know,
right.
It's very destructive and psychologically damaging and inconsiderate of what would happen to her. It's all about what he wants. And what I said last time we talked is that every woman remembers a time when someone in that kind of position of authority sexualized them. And it's a very disturbing moment in a girl's, you know, experience. And I don't think Woody Allen defenders are getting that. It doesn't matter that he didn't adopt her officially. He was introduced to her as a father figure. Even if he was, you know, introduced as, you know, and I put teachers in the same category, uncles, close family, friends, you know, it's all very, very destructive. And so, you know, I think what the Soon Yi relationship shows is that he doesn't care what damage he causes. He wants what he wants. And that's certainly the mindset of a pedophile.
And isn't that what Dylan said? Is like when she found out about Soon Yi, she was like, I think she said, I just found out it wasn't just me, right? Mm-hmm. So that he was, there's probably a lot more to those, to both of those stories, in my opinion. So, you know, the Soon Yi stuff is pretty disturbing. I mean, I think they said in part two, they said that there was an open question when the started whether she was still in high school or not, because I think they said he was calling her at high school or something like that, or in Connecticut. Do you remember that?
I know he was calling her at summer camp, but that was later, so much so that she had to leave her camp counselor position. I mean, why? I think we talked, why is a middle-aged man you'd want to date a camp counselor? But I know that the maids told stories that they found condoms in the trash and stained sheets after Soon Yi left when she was in high school from her visits to his apartment from when she was in high school. She would sneak over. So it makes how much of this do you think was done to punish Mia Farrow?
A lot, don't you think? Like, he probably didn't want her to be talking or having any you know, motherly defense of her children. Don't you think that was part of it? Kind of, I got the vindictiveness I thought was there, definitely.
Definitely. I think a lot of this was done to hurt her, break her children, take her children away, punish her. I think, and it's shocking that marriage has lasted so long between Soon Yi and Woody Allen. And I think that, I mean, he has a very high IQ. From what I hear, she has a pretty low IQ. He's very worldly. She is not. I mean, what do they have in common besides their hatred of Mia Farrow at this point?
I don't know. I was surprised that they did 13 films together. that Alan and Pharaoh. So she was definitely, I think her part of her relationship with Alan was getting these roles, right? Constantly being in his movies and stuff like that. But I think right. She said over time he was eroding her self-esteem, kind of like their power dynamic. He was in control.
You can see that. I mean, he has really reminds you how much money Woody Allen has. And also, and she also said that she was blacklisted in America from working. Now, I kind of, my eyebrow raised a little that, was she blacklisted or was she a middle-aged actress where there are such few parts?
It might have been, I mean, they're right. So there you go back to her telling the story, right? So she's mm-hmm. like countering with her narrative in this. And it makes mm-hmm. me wonder how this whole documentary series got started. Was it on her behalf? Was she trying to find the director? Did the directors mm-hmm. and the producers come and find her? Did you ever find anything about that? Because it seemed like Dylan and Mia Farrow were more than willing to talk about everything in detail.
Right. From the way that, who knows if it's true or not, the way the directors tell it is that they begged them, asked them, had to really work on them to participate. I don't know. And what do you think about Moses and Woody Allen not participating? They say they were asked.
I don't know. I think it's interesting that he like, of Alan for whatever reason. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting that they pulled these snippets of his audiobook apropos of nothing. And, that was his whole approach of like how he was the father when, according to other observers, he wasn't. He was just kind of a guy who showed up.
Yeah, I had some, when you're dating someone and you have 7 kids, you go out on a couple dates and the guy said, I have no interest in kids and you have 7 kids. Don't you cut it off and say, I don't want this to go any further. Not like
how many kids, how many kids does she have total? Cause at that time she had 7 and then they added more and more. Right.
Right. I think I have a list of 14 or 15 kids she has had all together. Yeah. It's intense.
And then Dershowitz shows up too, so they got another guy who's embroiled with Epstein is in there making commentaries. Dershowitz is still in court with Virginia Giuffre. I don't know what the update on that case is.
I don't either, but it's just, I thought, wow, if only she knew. If only she knew. And you wonder if he was like a double agent. and that whole thing was, did he represent her correctly? Did he have any kind of friendship with Woody Allen at that time through Epstein? It'd be interesting to know.
I mean, it seems like Allen was over at Epstein's place a lot. There's pictures of them together when Allen's mm-hmm. with Suni. And same with Dershowitz. I mean, according to other observers, Dershowitz was in and out of that mansion on, what is it, the Upper East Side, is that right?
He was the Upper East Side, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's a smaller world, and they brought up Polanski, Jackson, Cosby, all these other kind of abusers, too, so.
Have you heard Kathy Griffin tell the story of when she met Woody Allen?
No, what's the story?
The story is that he doesn't know any sort of current celebrities that she's trying to, I guess she got seated next to him at some sort of dinner party. Mm-hmm. And the one celebrity that he knew was Miley Cyrus. And he said he never missed an episode of Hannah Montana. Because he said she just has something and it's sad to see what's happened. So he's watching,
weird, stuff. Was it Nickelodeon or something?
Yeah. And then he said, well, and I right now I'm watching my friend Bill Cosby get railroaded. That's what he said to her. That's and he hints, you can see he's starting to go there in his book talking about Weinstein he kind of cuts it short. It looks like he's going to complain that he got a raw deal, and he kind of cuts it short and finesses it, the audio part that they use in the documentary.
Right, but they had other kind of celebrities come out in defense of Woody Allen, and then some gave their money back, right? I mean, right. There definitely were, and I think it was interesting when Ronan brought up the transactional access journalism theme about how Allen kind of manipulated, and his PR person was Leslie Dart, how they kind of expected certain things and, you know, certain journalism access with strings attached. Did you kind of get that impression?
Yes, and we saw that with Bill Cosby, speaking of Bill Cosby, where he said, if you want to be seen as a serious journalist, you better scuttle this interview where I'm confronted with these allegations. And he also gave a story of his daughter in exchange for a story about him assaulting women to be, you know, buried.
Yeah.
So yeah. It seems like it's common thing in Hollywood.
Hollywood, yeah. Never really get to the truth. That's why so much of this stuff gets put. I mean, you can actually bring up the West Memphis 3. How few people bring that up, and real journalists. So you can kind of a broader, you know, landscape that this is going on, not just Allen, but all kinds of other people too.
And the, I also had to, when Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times came up in the documentary of saying that I was happy to give Dylan a voice, I was happy to give this victim a voice. This is the same Nicholas Kristof, and I tweeted this, who has been trying to free Kevin Cooper, this rapist murderer, killed a whole family in California that also Kim Kardashian is trying to get out.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
He's been writing love letter pieces and about, it starts talking about the media and fact checking and, you know, the whole theme of what Woody Allen said, the whole theme of the documentary, it doesn't matter what's true, it matters what's believed. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, because certainly that's what Nicholas Kristof is doing with that Kevin Cooper case. He has written so many articles leaving out most of the evidence and pulling, you know, and really obscuring the truth of that story in order to free a multi, you know, a killer.
Right. But didn't the appeal say that there was no chance anybody else could have done the crime, if I remember correct? Wasn't Cooper in like an abandoned house or something like that?
Right. He broke out of prison. I don't know this case as well as I know others, but he broke out of prison, went to a family's house, murdered the whole family. And I think there was a kid's, one of the smaller male children lived. And then they wanted to test all the, and then stole their car, escaped. Right. So he was already on the run from prison when this happened.
Right, I remember.
He escaped from prison, killed all these people in Chino Hills, California. And then they tested his DNA, and they purposely, as the Innocence Project does, test things that weren't related to the scene of the crime or weren't argued, weren't part of the prosecution's argument. So there were things that they thought they might turn up other people's DNA, but they failed because it all came back with his DNA on it. So miraculously, that almost never works like that.
And then he's pictured with Kardashian, right? Smiling.
Hugging him.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oy.
So it's an interesting mix of all these stories under this story. So then
true.
So there's Alan Dershowitz. There's Nicholas Kristof. There's all these people, and each of those people have a story of their own. You know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that they kind of brought out the female film critics really to try to give some context to Alan and his movies and what it was like to kind of now looking at his movies in retrospect after all of these events. You know, I thought that was it seems like Woody Allen is nobody. There was all these up and coming actors and actresses that wanted to work with him. It seems like that's dried up. Do you think that that's true?
He's over. This is the death knell in his career. This documentary, it's over for him. It's over. It's at least in America. Maybe in Europe he'll have some kind of career, but not in America anymore. It's over.
Didn't they say his most recent film was distributed in France but not in the U.S.?
Yes. Something like that. Yeah. But he doesn't have a chance of having a comeback. No, his whole reputation is ruined, as it should be, you know? But he will always have, like Michael Jackson has, these sort of super fan, male super fans. And in this case, they're kind of these skeptic guys who like to call themselves skeptics without being very skeptical themselves. And they will do his bidding. They have a million blogs, a million YouTube videos they're making with, you know, a great deal of views. And they will continue to try to spin this as much as they can by denying all the evidence and mainly trying to put the focus on Mia Farrow.
Dylan was coached methodically. That was the theme that they were always trying to impress upon her. I think that's why those home movies were oft repeated in the documentary, is because they were trying to show that Farrow was just kind of asking Dylan questions, not trying to coach her.
What did you think of those clips?
I mean, I had an uncomfortable feeling watching the entire thing, because it was so, like you said, I just felt like there was a lack of objectivity. But I felt like as a juror,
they were sold as the big piece of evidence. To me, they're very clippy and hard to tell what happened before or after. I certainly believed her when she was talking, but I think I found much more. I mean, what convinces me again is what comes out of Woody Allen's mouth and his actions. I believe her. If evidence came out that she was coached, you know, fine, but I don't think, it doesn't look coached, certainly from those clips, that it's hard to tell what's going on.
Her new husband didn't seem to believe that she was coached.
Oh, I don't believe she was. I don't believe she was coached, but it's just hard to tell in those clips. They're very, you know, it's very hard to get a child. And the other problem with the coaching story is that she'd have no memory of being coached, and then it would become her own. It's just hard to say. No one saw it happening. It's just, you know, all the other, every piece sort of adds up, not every piece, but a lot of the pieces, enough of the puzzle so we can see the picture in this, that he was, how it happened, how it sort of built up, these kind of resentments. What I'd like to know is what was going on in Mia Farrow and Woody Allen's relationship. Was it anything, or was it just spite, pure spite, to just cause this much destruction and this much upset? And he seems to like doing it. There seems to be some pleasure in tearing her down and tearing the family down.
Yeah, I got that feeling too. Like a little thrill, mm-hmm. like he was getting kind of a dark satisfaction or something out of that. Like he's a famous guy. He could probably, he has money. I think I looked at he's like worth $140 million.
Wow.
Yeah. So he could probably have paid Epstein or whatever for whatever thrills that he wanted, mm-hmm. and not have to worry about it. So then there's something else involved when it's like you're a predator on your own girlfriend's kids. So that's, there's definitely
One thing I was glad that the documentary did, because I read Moses's blog, several of his posts, especially the very famous blog that he wrote about his mother, and that the train set didn't exist, and that he watched his sister the whole day. And I was very glad that they could debunk those things, because that was absurd to say that the train set didn't exist. Those kind of details are really important. And I do not think that the Connecticut investigators would go up to that room and find those details missing and just say, okay, you know, that would be a major red flag.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, there was a criminal investigation, right? So, I mean, all that stuff. There was weird stuff too. Like, why would he make this kind of like public statement at the Plaza Hotel, like, oh, I'm going to go give a, you know, public hearing here. And I thought that was odd too. Like, why wouldn't he just, you know, do something at his house, just somewhere else? It's almost like a kind of unnecessarily ornate, you know, public statement. Did you get any feel for that from him?
I mean, the Plaza is a beloved New York at the time, New York institution, and he's reminding everyone that he's part of that beloved. He's also a beloved part of a New York institution himself. I don't know. That's how I make sense, right? Of course, I'm going to be. It's just one of the most elegant, amazing buildings, right on Central Park. You know, he's part of that. I think that has a lot to do with why New York was so quick to, like I said. But it's the other odd thing was that when the psychiatrist said, who's dealing with Woody Allen and his odd obsession with Dylan, says that his behavior isn't sexual. It can be perceived by the child as sexual, but it isn't sexual.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So what, here's my question, William Ramsey. What's the difference with a child being subjected to behavior that they perceive as sexual but isn't versus a child being subjected to behavior, and I would guess that would go along with, and actions, I'm going to add that to the first as well, that is sexual? Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the difference in the child's mind, whether it is or not? If the child perceives it that way, isn't it equally as damaging?
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely. I got to wrap this up. My cat's really going crazy. Do you have anything you'd like to add? No, it's not your fault. I'm sorry to break this off, but it's kind of like a minor emergency. Where can people go see you? It's on Roberta Glass, True Crime Report on YouTube, right? And then also you have your podcast, right?
True Crime. Yeah, I'm on YouTube. I'm on iTunes. Castbox, everywhere you can find Castbox. A podcast, awesome. I'm there. Thanks.
Birdie Glass, thank you so much. And
thank you. Hope you're okay.
I'm fine. The cat, not so much. I gotta go. All right, take care. Thanks so much.
Bye.